Welcome to the Life is Relationships podcast, where we share biblical truths about marriage, parenting, and discipleship. The desire of the Inn of Last Resort is to see the hearts of individuals and families restored in their relationship to the Father, and for them to be empowered to have thriving, godly relationships that impact the communities around them.
Hi, welcome to today's episode. I'm Seth, and Alicia's here today. Alicia, what are we going to be talking about?
Hi, babe. Hi. Yes, I'm with you. I actually wanted to share about something that's really an area of passion in my heart, has been for a very long time, and that is curating a home that people actually want to be in, that your family wants to be in, and even that extends to others. And I use the word curating as one of my favorite words these days. And I think that creating is a little bit overused sometimes. But curating, it speaks to me of an intentionality. And it's just a purposefulness. And so curating a home and establishing an environment and an atmosphere that just communicates light, love, and life to the world, a door that is open, a light that is on, an atmosphere that people feel at home in, specifically your family. But that does extend to many, many others. We just read actually in Romans, this morning, actually, Paul sharing with everyone, I think it was in Romans 12, and he was saying, be hospitable. That's actually something that Paul talks about in Romans 12, and that struck me. We're all meant to be hospitable. And I think ultimately, at the core, everyone wants love, you know, in their home. And so we've spent a lot of time, conversations. I mean, it is our aim as a ministry to help reestablish love through the healing and restoring of relationships, and that starts in the home. So we've spoken a lot to that in the past, but how is that love, you know, what was on my heart was just, I was thinking, how does that love translate or reflect into the actual home, into the space, and actually materialize in the atmosphere or manifest in the environment itself? And what are some keys, either keys to just keys to cultivation. And anyway, so that's kind of what we're talking about today. I'll jump in. The first thing I wanted to talk about is preferring people over perfection. And I think in America, in suburbia, in the environment, in the cultural climate that we live in, I think it's pretty normal in the world for people to see their home as their castle, and almost like, you know, is there a moat around the castle? Is there a do not trespass sign or a do not trespass spirit on your property? I think a lot of times I see that, I recognize that on homes that people live in, or on, you know, land, neighborhoods sometimes have that feel. And your home is not just your castle, and it's not a shrine. It's actually a place where life is lived. And we used to live with our four kids in a three-bedroom and two-bath apartment. And our
upstairs, we had a fireplace.
It was a great apartment, and all our kids were little. Yeah. But we were constantly being sent those memos from the power company. Do you remember this? And they would always say, you're using a lot more power than your neighbors. Mm-hmm. And I actually, every time I got one of those, inside my heart went, yes. Because yeah,
and I said, doggone it.
Well, I kind of laughed because who raises four kids in an apartment? We did, and it was a really precious season. But I actually loved that the power company was like sending us these little notes and saying, hey, you know, you could do this to lower your power bill.
I love the fact that you say, who raises four kids in an apartment? yet we're raising four kids right now in the end with two basically hotel rooms.
Yeah. So we've just been weird. We've been weird for a long time, but
we're strange.
It was a precious season. And I loved the fact that we were living in our space. And I've thought so many times, like, this apartment, number X206 on Upriver Drive, it was more lived in than it had ever been. And I was really pleased by that fact, because your home is meant to be lived in. It's a place, you know, that should be emanating love and light and
hospitality.
Yeah. So preferring people over perfection. And here's a couple ways where that might, that I guess could be expressed or manifest. Number one, I would say, is in considering others' tastes and not just your own. And I'm speaking, I would say, mainly to the wives and the mothers who are listening. I think we are, you know, tasked primarily, I wouldn't say this is across the board, you know, the case, but I would say for the most part, it's the wife that creates the spaces and decorates and establishes an environment that she's built for her family. Now, certainly some men have really strong opinions and some wives don't. I would say more often than not, though, it's the wives. And we need to remember that the spaces that we're creating or curating are not just for women to dwell in. They're also for men and women to, you know, happily cohabitate, feel at home in, feel comfortable in, and even children. And so remembering that your preferences for decor, even as trivial and superficial as that may sound, don't take it in a direction that your husband, really can't tolerate the sight of. I think there's a reason that man caves, you know, kind of have come into existence. Maybe it's because Instagram, Pinterest, and the like have all driven up this kind of competition, maybe even between homemakers sometimes, that, you know, my house has got to look a certain way. My house, you know, I've got to keep up with, you know, back 8 years ago, it was Joanna Gaines. And, you know, she was just making huge waves. But people like that who establish an aesthetic, you know, many, many women try to uphold it, try to meet it. And anyway, I wanted to definitely mention that right off the bat, that we're curating a space that tailors to each person's tastes and preferences, not just the feminine ones in the mix.
So is the input of, would you say it's important then for to get the husband's, you know, point of view or his, you know, ideas, is that important to mesh that in a way? Or, you know, because I think that's a good,
yeah, that's,
in one part too, you're speaking of trends, you know, so are you saying, you know, are you saying don't so much follow a trend? Because I think that what you're touching on is very, very good. I think how's the outlook?
Yeah, that's a really good question. That's a good question. I think there's nothing wrong with following trends, but your heart in creating your spaces ought to be, you know, what would make him feel at home and comfortable and proud? You know, proud to have his friends over, proud to have a dinner party, proud to host family. What would make my husband feel, you know? And that's a good prompter for conversations. I think sometimes there is a little bit of a clash, you know, like a husband will be like, well, you know, I want a deer head on the mantle, you know, or they'll kind of go to an extreme. There's this, you know, there has to be compromise. The husband has to bend as well as the wife, to concede. You know, there are certain things we would have really, really strong opinions about. I, for one, am really, really particular about lighting. And you like that about me, that I really love lighting, and I, you know, I'm very careful and choosing, you know, the lights that are going to create the atmosphere that I want. But then I also know that you don't have hair on your head.
Sweetie, you're covering my baldness right now.
And if
right here on the podcast.
If I pay $400 for a gorgeous chandelier or lamp that's going to constantly bring you pain because you're going to knock into it because it's terribly positioned or horribly hung, or it encroaches on a space that you use a lot and you're constantly in battle with it, you know, that's a concession I need to make. That's a kind of an extreme example.
You don't
want
to cause your husband to stumble.
I don't want to cause my husband to stumble. And, yeah, so I think compromise.
So you're saying there's a give and take.
There is definitely a give and take. Yeah. And
can you think of anything early on in our marriage where you, where we, it might've been a, you know, a little bit of butting of heads.
Oh, can you, that sounds like a loaded question.
I'm asking you first because they're giving me time to think.
Well, thanks.
I'm sure you could.
I
feel like there's things I tried to hang up on walls that you.
I do.
Like, no, I'm not, that shouldn't be there.
Yeah, I took an interior design course when I was younger, and I remember, you know, there's this golden rule of design that they communicated at least in the 90s, and it was basically, you're not going for symmetry. You're splitting things into thirds. You know, if you're going to put, for instance, candlesticks on the mantle, you're not going to put four of them. You're going to put three of them.
And I love symmetry.
And Seth, on the other hand, has always been bent towards making things perfectly symmetrical. And so I do
something
think
something in my mind just works better.
I know. I think for 19 years, you've been making things perfectly symmetrical, and I've been coming back. And
I've noticed. And I forgive.
We've had many conversations about that, but you've been very gracious. And I think there's been give and take, you know?
Yes.
You can edit however you see fit.
No, keep it in.
In that, AJ.
No, he's not editing. We're all tape, babe.
Okay.
All right. Where you at?
Another thing that I wanted to mention, and this is a really big one for me, and I've never heard this shared anywhere else, but I've just kind of formulated my own philosophy of filling a home with things, with belongings. And I just came up with this a few minutes before the podcast, but I'm calling it the happy house trifecta. And that is, everything in your home ought to be one of three things. It ought to be either beautiful or functional or meaningful or all three or some combination of the three. And if everything in your home, for instance, is only one of the trifecta, then you're going to have a home that's not as welcoming, not as inviting, not as comfortable. For instance, if you have a home full of things that are only beautiful but not functional, you're going to be, you know, scratching yourself on the hard edges and breaking glass and smearing things, and you're going to constantly feel like you're living in a museum or a shrine. If you have a home full of things that are only functional, then you're just going to feel like you're living in, you know, like a toddler's room or a kitchen pantry. You're going to just constantly, none of the things around you are necessarily going to bring you a level of joy that they could if they were, had some beauty or had some meaningfulness to them. So function is really important, but everything in your space doesn't just need to be functional. You also need to have beautiful. And then the last one is meaningful. I think that, you know, there's people are different levels of sentimental and nostalgic about their things. But that's a big one, you know, honoring if you have a spouse or a kid that is really sentimental about things, you know, you have the honor of helping them navigate. Okay, what do we keep? What do we display? What do we store away and just take out, you know, every 3 years to look at and talk about? It is a tricky one when we have, sentimental, but everybody does, really. Everyone's got those things that they got from their parents or that they made when they were young, or they got from a relative who's passed away. Everyone has those things that are special, and those are really important in a home. And if you have a home that's only full of sentimental and meaningful in that way, again, you're going to have a home that's a little bit out of balance. And so, meaningful, again, that trifecta, I'll say, is beautiful, functional, and meaningful. And everything that you look at, everything you place your eyes on in your home, if you were to sit and do this exercise, sit in a room, look around, everything needs to either be one of those things. It needs to be beautiful or functional or meaningful. And if it isn't any of those things, then you should probably not have it in your home.
That's good.
An additional way that we prefer people in our homes over perfection is to make your home full of things that people gather around and where conversation is fostered, where interaction between people is encouraged. And of course, tables are like probably the primary place that people would think of. Oh, I gather around a table. I gather around with people, you know, people who come for the holiday, people just on a regular night of the week. I'll gather around with my family. But there's other things. And I want everyone to like think outside the screen for a moment. I didn't love it. And even in my youth, I didn't love it when the TV over the fireplace became the thing, or the TV became the focal point of the entire living room. I think there's a place for a TV and we love watching things with our family, but if you have a gigantic TV and every single chair or seating place in the room is pointed at the TV, what does that indicate about your family and the priorities that you have? You can still sit in those chairs and have a conversation, but I would encourage you, if you'd like to depend less on the screen as a gathering place, then reposition your furniture. I know that's super practical and maybe kind of quirky and particular, but you know, think outside the screen. Does your family like to play games? Then create a game table. Does your family like to retell stories about experiences or vacations or family reunions or family histories? If so, then, you know, create a sitting area that has, you know, the family photos close by or the photo albums close by, or, you know, pictures that will prompt conversation or meaningful memories. Another thing to gather around are like things that we create together. And some of those might be things that you do with your kids, like even building Lego. I think that I love Lego personally, and I found it was a really cool gathering place with my kids when they were younger. And when my life was a little bit less full, this was before I was homeschooling. But it meant a lot to my kids and myself that we would, you know, have actually quality time building something together. And we still talk about the really cool creations that we made. Train sets, sewing projects and crafting, making music together. If you've got family members that love making music, then create a part of your house where the instruments are put together, are gathered, and, you know, make a little discipline of, you know, visiting that space together every so often, you know, maybe on a weekly basis. Obviously the kitchen, and there's so many people that derive pleasure and joy out of baking and cooking in the kitchen. And I know that my kids like to cook even more than I do. Like I'm okay with cooking, but they really love cooking, and they especially love baking. And, you know, they love gathering around baking projects.
You get that from Auntie Zozo.
Yeah, they probably get it from you, actually. Yeah, you, I like to cook. You like to be inventive in the kitchen.
Yeah. If someone's listening to this and they might not have been raised with any kind of this thinking, where do they start? So how do you start to curate as you started the podcast? Like where do they start with this? Do they start just some desires in their heart? Mm-hmm. Some of the passions that are already there, some leanings in those ways. How can they start to curate some of these things in their lives to make it practical for them to see the fruit and, mm-hmm. and see some of these good things in their lives?
Mm-hmm.
What are some good things they can do?
Mm-hmm. I think you'd have to start with self-examination. If you don't currently have people desiring to come and sit and linger in your home and spend quality time together, then take a moment to consider, you know, some of the things I've mentioned already. Do you only have spaces that are really pointing at a screen, for one? Do you have places that don't feel like, you know, a space that humans can come and have fun together in? Do they only feel a certain, do they only communicate that I want to live in a magazine, or I want to keep up with the Joneses, or, you know, I don't care about beauty. I just want to get the job done. If you have a home, so it just takes self-examination, you know, what things do you maybe need to alter or change or readjust, in your home?
That's good.
I think there's a lot of women out there who actually love quality time with people and desire to have that type of home, but maybe lack some of these, you know, practical keys. And you were saying, how do you do it? Well, here are a couple more little practical keys that are coming to mind. But again, I mentioned light. Light is a huge deal. You want ample light, but you don't want harsh light. People, it's like scientifically proven, they will linger longer in spaces that are beautifully lit, not just functionally lit. That means choose warm light over cool light. Choose soft light over, you know, harsh fluorescent or LED light. That's a really, really, really big one for me.
And can some people look for, I mean, I guess they can just Google well lit. I mean, what are some places they can find to inspire, you know, lighting? Because that's not just something that I would know how to do. Like you mm-hmm. had it from your design school or class and other things. But where would, I mean, mm-hmm. so where are some good resources maybe?
Yeah, I think you've got to open your eyes. And what one of my favorite things, I don't get on social media besides Facebook really ever. But one of the things I love to do is go to like design websites, or there's this website called Houzz, Houzz. And I've looked at it for probably 12 years now, but it's hugely inspirational when I want to create a space and I'm not quite sure what the pieces of that space are going to look like. I'll go to Houzz.com, little plug, and I'll just peruse, you know, hundreds of pictures, and it doesn't take long. I click through them really quickly. But I'll notice, oh, I do really like the way that's lit up, or I do really like that style, or these pictures keep popping up in my preferences for a reason. So look at things, lift your eyes, look around, just start to figure out what draws your attention, what makes you go, wow, I'd love to be in that space. So that's something I would say, you know, the lighting is a big one. Also, a tip to the world. Please, if you're followers of Jesus and you're walking in the light and you want to be a light to the world, please let your house shine, so to speak. Don't let your house always be dark from the street. Like, it doesn't reflect that life is being lived in that space when you only ever see a dark facade. So turn a porch light on. In fact, if you have a dinky, dim porch light, please get a new porch light.
get some blinking neon.
Well, if you're that type, then sure. That's one way to bring pizzazz and life to your yard. But I think warm light emanating from your windows, it says a lot about what's going on inside. And it honestly makes the lonely want to enter. And anyway, a couple other like little practical tips, but like have comfortable seating areas where people are very naturally able to have conversations and they're not talking like 20 feet apart. You know, think of a good conversational size space. You want, you know, maybe 4 to 5 feet apart rather than 20. A couple other things, I guess, would be like, I mean, I'm a musician and music is one of the quickest ways to establish an atmosphere. If I'm cooking, I want certain music depending on the mood I'm in. If I'm having guests and I want it to be a relaxed, you know, evening, then I'm going to turn on a certain playlist to create an atmosphere. So that's a huge way, a huge tool for me. I think that, you know, having things that are conversation pieces like art, things that are beautiful. You want things in your home to say, let's talk, let's sit down, let's reflect. And I'll also speak to the issue of organization. I think that, it's really important that, in my opinion, it's important that everyone feel like they can confidently contribute to the peace and the beauty of the home. And that requires organization, because when it's time to clean up because company's coming over, or it's time to clean up because it's the end of the day and nobody wants to wake up to a messy home, it's pretty important that, you know, everything has its place. And the more we establish everything has its place, and even the youngest kid is familiar with the system that's in place, the more everyone can feel like, I'm sewing into this home. I'm a part of this. You know, I'm not just a passive participant. I'm actually a contributor to the peace and the beauty that is my home. And I'm proud to have my friends and family enter it. And
I think that way, I guess you're impacting the next generation. Our kids too.
Yeah.
I think they're getting that, what creates a peaceful, inviting home.
Yeah.
See that, experience that. I think that's a pretty big
element
to what we've tried to create. Mm-hmm. You've done a great job pioneering that. But yeah.
Yeah. I think too, like you asked a few minutes ago, what can people do to like start taking steps? I think specifically for organization, if you're not a particularly organized person when it comes to stuff, then please be humble enough to pull a friend in and say, please help me. You know, if you were to open my cabinets, you'd be horrified because I don't have a system in place, but I recognize the need for one. I recognize that my kids, you know, need a better system that they can uphold and sustain for themselves in their room or in the toy closet or in the playroom or in the living room. Just pull in a friend or, you know, go to a seminar. I went to a seminar years ago on organization and, you know,
I feel like you're attacking hoarders right now.
And I'm not.
Babe, what do you think about the way I gutted my closet?
I was actually pretty thrilled. I was pretty thrilled.
Did you see that big Santa bag?
I did.
Wasn't that amazing?
I did. I was really thrilled. And it's
Aren't
my
you
turn.
So proud of me?
I am proud of you. You did great.
Now I can buy some new clothes, maybe.
Yeah, I figured that was coming. Yeah, so look up a website that gives really good step-by-step organizational, you know, tasks and tricks and advice. Get a friend in there to help you get rid of stuff. Like, look again with that, you know, the happy house trifecta. If it's not beautiful or functional and needed often or meaningful, then why do I have it? My house will be better off for not having it inside my house.
That'll be better in the dumpster.
It'd be better in the dumpster or at a thrift store.
There's too many clothes in the world.
So if there are those of you out there, I hope, that have longed to have a home that is a place where connection is made, where beauty is created, where family thrives and life is being lived, and you haven't necessarily known how to bring some more of that. I hope that some of these things have maybe just sparked some thoughts. Bring whatever thoughts you have to your spouse, to your kids. I think that we're each afforded an amazing responsibility in life to be hospitable and to curate, to use my preferred word, to curate a space and a place that is beautiful, and that really does emanate life and light to those who are outside of it and beckon them to come in. And so seize the day, seize the opportunity, seize a Saturday, seize a Sunday afternoon or a day off to start to find your own keys to curating your home and making it what you've always wanted it to be. Anyway, thanks for listening. I hope that this has been insightful, and we just thank you guys for listening. Take care, and we bless you, and we say bye.
Thanks so much. See you. Bye.
Thanks so much for listening to today's episode. If it was a blessing or even just entertaining, it would mean so much to us for you to share it with someone you love to help us continue growing and sharing our vision with others. Be sure to like, follow, and subscribe so you don't miss a single episode. And for more information about the Inn of Last Resort and our upcoming programs, you can find us on social media or check out our website at innoflastresort.org.